Blog Talk Radio.
Official audio show. I am once again, as always and forever and ever, your host Ernest Gabion, joined by boxing scene correspondent Luis Sandoval.
Hello, everyone.
And Ryan Burton.
What's going on, everybody? Good evening.
What's going on, people? We got a jam-packed show. I can't even breathe right now. I got to get it on because I got to call Manny Stewart. We got some stuff that we're gonna talk about. More than likely, the HBO show. Showbox. If we get time, we'll talk about the Showbox. So mainly the HBO fights for this past weekend. But let's no delay. In fact, we can talk to Manny about Andy Lee. Let me get Mr. Manny Stewart on the line here.
Hello,
Manny. Mr. Stewart.
Hello.
Mr. Stewart.
Yes.
Hey, it's Ernie from the Boxing Lab.
Oh, fam, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Hey, so what's been going on with you?
Everything is fine.
Let's just cut straight to the chase. We just heard today, and I guess you confirmed on Sunday that you're not coaching Miguel Cotto for this fight. What exactly happened? What was the chain of events that led to kind of this decision?
After I came in from the Andy Lee fight, I got a text from Gabby Pinnaker, his attorney, saying that Miguel had decided to move on without you, and that's it.
Well, were you shocked? I mean, it had to have been quite a surprise.
I was somewhat shocked because, you know, I was supposed to be leaving, I guess, this week, which would have been plenty of time. But it was not that much of explanation, but I saw it on the internet that he has got a Cuban, that was a coach with the Cuban team and had a lot of degrees or whatever and things of that nature physical condition and all of that. And that's what they had decided that was more important in this fight, to have someone having him condition-wise. So.
It seems to me, and Steve Kim kind of from Max Boxing kind of emphasized this, but it seemed to me like they wanted a full long camp where, like you said, the focus was on conditioning and so forth.
I've trained him for two fights, and I've been there for 5 to 6 weeks. This would have been 7 weeks. We Andy Lee just fought on October the 1st. He's
yeah.
Until December the 3rd, so that's ridiculous.
Well, I mean,
7 weeks
is
an adequate time for anybody. In fact, I was just speaking to Spiel Landman, who's the conditioning coach, just about a week ago, and he was just telling me he was just getting in, and he needed about 2 weeks to get him, you know, in his conditioning shape, which we normally what we do. And before I got there, anyway. It's almost 2 months before the fight, so that's come on.
I have to say, I mean, you sound a little bit upset about this. I understand, you expect something and it doesn't happen.
This doesn't make any sense to me. But, you know, that's life. You know, the main thing is I'll be on there and enjoy and promote, you know, and do my job as working as a broadcaster for the fight.
Now, is it an amicable split between you and Miguel? I mean, I know.
I spoke to the guys from the camp. In fact, that was just what you call Tex and Phil right there. We've been still talking and communicating and, we're still friends. I mean, this is just something I was kind of surprised. This is a hard fight.
Yeah.
And just got to have exact strategy in this fight. And maybe the new guy, who I don't know who it is, he can do that. But, it's a difficult fight. And Miguel means a lot to a lot of us in boxing. He's a big attraction. And I have a lot of Puerto Rican friends, too. really, I know it's a very emotional fight, and he's got to win this fight, and it's a fight that he should win. Fairly easy, I think, because I think he's recuperated and regenerated his body, so to say, as compared to, you know, Margarita, who's had two real bad beatings in his last fights. And even though, Miguel had three tough fights, he still has had time to recuperate in his last two fights. Not only did he win, but he didn't even suffer any cuts or swelling, or as his mother said, for the first time in the last 2 years that they have not had to be in the hospital all night, you know, from the, Kalati fight, Pacquiao and Margarita, all those are some tough fights.
So now,
he should be solid enough, I think, and strong enough in this fight, particularly with the great support he's going to get to come through.
Yeah, and you still, even without you in the corner, you still pick Miguel to win?
I think he's got a solid amateur background, good professional, you know, background also. Been in a lot of big fights, and I think he's had enough rest time as compared to Margarita from the, you know, tough fights that he should come through, and especially with some good support he's going to get.
Cool.
Hey, Mr. Stewart, this is Louis Sandoval. Thank you for being here. My question is, Bob Arum has been on record saying that also some of the problem with you and Cotto was a money situation. Can you refute that or confirm those claims that he's making right now?
No, we cleared that up. I talked to him on the phone on that.
Okay. And
that
then, okay, move it. Go ahead.
That was not, because we'd agreed to that on the phone.
Understood. Moving on to your fighter, Andy Lee, he just fought this weekend. How impressed and how did you like his performance this weekend? Did everything go as planned?
I was very satisfied with Andy's performances because it was not a really dramatic or super impressive fight as far as a fan entertaining fight, but it was the technical type fight that we planned, and it was a necessary strategy in order to win. You have to fight a very technical fight. You know, Brian Vera may not be one of the top elite type fighters, but he's got a style that's very difficult for some fighters sometimes, much like Ali had a problem with Kenny Norton, you know, just style-wise, even though Foreman and guys can knock out Norton. Ali always had a problem with him. And Vera's a tough guy. He lost three fights, but the three fights that he lost recently have been to undefeated fighters, too. But in this fight here, he had a 12-week notice for training, which he said it was the longest he'd ever had, meaning Vera. So he was in great shape, and we knew that you're not going to knock him out with one punch, so you have to just hit him and watch and see if you get him hurt, then you go all out. Whereas the first fight, Andy went, you know, all out because we thought we had him hurt and didn't realize that he just had such bad balance a lot. And sometimes he would lose his balance and fall, but we would think he would be hurt, so... For this fight, we was a little better prepared, a little bit more respect for Vera also. And he fought a good fight. I thought he boxed well on the outside, and when he had to go in close and block and, you know, roll punches, he did that also.
And then another fighter that was on that card in the main event was Sergio Martinez. There were talks about maybe Andy Lee facing him. First of all, what was your impression on Sergio Martinez's performance, and what about a possible fight with Andy Lee and Sergio Martinez?
I thought Sergio fought a good fight. It was not one of his better performances because a guy like Bach is not that easy to fight, you know. Sergio is waiting on the guy to punch where he can, you know, counterpunch or do something, and the guy just covers up, and won't punch. So Sergio had to do twice the work, you know. He was actually throwing twice the amount of punches, actually fighting for both of them in order to keep any type of action flow. And as a result of that, when those guys that don't punch much, they walk you and they do punch, they kind of catch you because you're not expecting them to punch. So he's a very difficult guy to fight, Barker. But Sergio did what he had to do. He stayed busy, you know, started picking up points, you know, putting those in the bank and hoping that something may happen. And then along the way, he ends up with a right jab cross or whatever you call it, and Barker goes down and didn't get up. You know, it didn't seem like the punch was that powerful to me, but you can never tell, especially when the guy's been getting hit a lot with blows. And I think the fight was a little tougher than what he's used to having over there in Europe. And Sergio came through, and he did what he had to do. You're not going to look great in all of your fights. But if Bach had thrown more punches, I think Sergio would have made the counterpunch more effective and found more openings. But in this case, it was very difficult for him to fight with a guy that kept his hands up over his head all night. And as far as him and Andy Lee, you know, it's they're the most probably recognizable middleweights in the United States, I would say, definitely. So it's a good possibility that they may be fighting, I would say, maybe sometime in the first quarter of next year. And if not, you know, whichever way it goes, Andy, we're satisfied. The main thing, he's in a good position. And eventually he'll be fighting for a title, whether it's Sergio or someone else, with him next year. So I'm very comfortable with his progress.
And another fighter that you were working with was Chad Dawson. You know, putting everything aside, what do you think his chances are against Bernard Hopkins, and how do you see the fight going?
I think chances against Bernard are still very good because Chad has the computer printout style that would come out to me in my computer, where I put information very bad and difficult for Bernard. You know, tall, left-handed, very fast, well-coordinated, you know. And so it can be a big problem. But Bernard is something that, you know, it's very difficult for anyone to take easy because he's such a determined man, extremely determined, knows how to win fights by adjusting better than anybody that I've saw in recent times. I mean, he's like a marvelous Marvin Hagler was. I mean, he makes adjustments, and I've seen him do that throughout his entire career. And he is so smart that he knows the areas that he's inferior to Chad Dawson, and so he's going to find ways to neutralize him. And then he's got some really brilliant brains behind him in terms of boxing minds between him and Nassim Richardson, Leon Taps, and Danny Davis, and Bernard himself. You put all of them together, they are the type of guys that's going to be working and studying 24/7 on different ways and strategies to beat Chad, and I think that's going to neutralize those natural advantages that Chad has in youth. So I have to fight like a tosser, but it's hard to bet against Bernard, so if you have to make a bet, even though Chad has the experience, I mean the size and youth, Bernard is so determined, and a real determined, focused, intense fighter. It's very hard to beat, and I think that Bernard is more intense and determined going into this fight, though. So it's a tough fight.
Mr. Stewart, it's Ryan Burton here. Going back to the Miguel Cotto and Margarito fight, there was a lot made out of the catch weight of 153 pounds. Do you feel that the weight is going to be a severe disadvantage for Cotto, being small for a junior middleweight to begin with, and Margarito so much bigger?
That's a good question because, as you were just saying, I know when Miguel's last fight, we were training about a week before the fight. He was down to about 151, and then we had to tell him about to eat and get your weight back up. As Miguel is right there between the welterweight and junior middleweight, you know. He's right there about his best weight. It's probably about 150 or 51 pounds. And Margarita's still a much bigger guy. He's about 5'11". And, you know, I think Miguel is about 5'7". And even though I think Miguel is the fresher of the two, after both of them have been in some brutal fights in recent years, I think Miguel is fresher right now, and the tremendous New York crowd that he's going to have, you know, with all of the Puerto Ricans there, he's going to have a good advantage in that area, and his all-around skills is way superior, and his punching power compared to Margarita. But Margarita being a tall fighter, who's a pressure guy, and when you get pressure from a tall fighter on a short, smaller fighter, it can be effective. You know, it's not like a small guy the way that like Andy Lee could do with Vera. We had created this type of a jab and hook type that we could use on Vera that kept him off balance and kept his head moving around, and we could tie him up. It's easy for a tall fighter to slow down the momentum of a aggressive, you know, short fighter, but when you have the tall guy who's aggressive and covered up and just walking you down in this wave up above your head, it can be very difficult. So it's whether, in my belief, is Miguel has got to get some respect from Margarita early. And by landing the hard blows or something, maybe a solid stiff jab, and if possible, trying to force Margarita to back up. So Margarita has shown that he doesn't fight well backing up. And that's what Shane Mosley did to him. And see, because, you know, Miguel doesn't dip and dodge and do things the way that Manny can. Manny can go in and out, change directions and do things. It took advantage of the slow foot speed of Margarita, where it's not really Miguel. But Miguel has to get some respect from him early. it's a key to the fighters to get respect in the early rounds because he has a great punch, and if he can catch Margarito with a left hook to the body or head or something and get a little respect from him, he won't be able to apply that consistent, fast pressure that he was putting in the first fight. He put a lot of pressure on Miguel and made Miguel fight at a faster pace than he wanted to and had planned to, and that was the difference in the fight. He gradually wore Miguel down.
And I also read that part of the issues, too, were the logistics. Doesn't Vladimir also have a fight coming up in December? Was that a problem? I mean, you'd probably have
to... not a problem at all. Vladimir was never, in this case, it was Vladimir was even considering possibly, you know, moving his fight, you know, back, you know. So that was not it.
What, now that you're not going to train Cotto, have you heard, is Vladimir still going to fight? I think it was Mormek in December.
Yeah, well, I'm probably going to work with him if it's the case. But at that time, that was not an issue.
Okay. And going back to the Sergio Martinez fight, I know you can't give away what the game plan for Andy Lee would be, but seeing the way that Barker fought Martinez, can you give us a little bit on what you think that Lee might be able to exploit on Martinez, since Martinez didn't look like, you know, the gangbuster he had been in the fight against Zurich or Paul Williams in the second fight?
No, I'm not going to go into that. We've been always, since Martinez is the key figure and has been for the last, to me, 2 years in the middleweight division, so we've had plenty of time to think. And, you know, it's always the case when, you know, you're the primary fighter. In our certain divisions, we've thought of that, but I don't want to divulge all that now. But regardless of what it is, Martinez is still going to be a very tough fight for anyone, though. Very fast, very high-spirited, great stamina going down the stretch also. And just a high-spirited, well-coordinated athlete, so he's going to be a tough fight for anyone.
So, Manny, hey, this is Ernie once again. Let's take it back a little bit. Let me ask you a question about, from a historical standpoint, if you had to get in and go against one trainer just to see if your boxing acumen matched someone else, who would it be and why?
As a trainer?
Yeah, as a trainer.
I don't know. I've had a lot throughout the years. I've been with Eddie Futch and Angelo and all of these. None of the guys that's out here today, I think a lot of them are good. There's no particular one guy. I think Nassim Richardson, Freddie Roach, all of those guys are good trainers.
Yeah.
But you asked me the question, I have not thought about that at all.
You know? Okay.
I think that and all of the guys that I mentioned, there are some very hard-working trainers, too. Like Freddie, you know, his biggest claim to fame has been spinning off of Manny, but he's the first to tell you that he's really, you know, is appreciative of the fact that Manny is really, what, for the most part, has been his signature fighter. But still, Freddie works very hard. I mean, he goes to the gym, you know, about 7:30 in the morning sometimes. You might see him at 8 o'clock still at the gym at night, you know. And the same with the Nash Richardson. So it's quite a few good traders out there that I have a lot of respect for. But I have not thought about that. But, you know, if you stay around in this business long enough, you get to go against all of them sooner or later.
Yeah, it's very true. I know that HBO had described how close you are to Andy Lee and how special the relationship is. Besides him, who from throughout your career were you actually very close to from a fighter perspective? That someone you can almost consider, I guess, maybe family or blood? Who?
You know, I know it's strange, you may not believe it, but I'm the two of them right now, and it's Vladimir. Vladimir is very close, and just coincidentally we're working with him now, but I would say Vladimir, and then after Vladimir, I would probably say, for as close as personally after, you know, not even when we were in training camps, I would probably say Tommy Hearns, the next.
Oh, wow.
But personally close, I spent a lot more time going and doing things with Latimer. Even today we called him. We just passed Monday night. I was out with him at the premiere of his documentary, and we go out together this in general. But I would say Andy and Latimer and Tommy Hearns.
Wow. That must have been some special relationships you've had with him.
Well, all of those guys, I mean, but Latimer just a very special person, you know. And we have a lot of things that we like to talk about and do that's way beyond boxing, a lot of politics and everything else. And just life in general, a lot of just what you would call just like psychology type stuff that we talk about a lot.
Yeah. So speaking of Vladimir, one thing that's been brought up, and I know you're a big fan of Chris Arreola's trainer, Henry Ramirez. He actually told me that you guys talked briefly while you were in Vegas for the, I guess, the Star Power card. And he actually said that there's entertaining the thought of Vladimir going against Arreola. Now, is that something that you'd like to see personally?
I would like to see it for, well, two reasons. One, I just talked to Vladimir, I guess, about 2 days ago. And it's Sunday. And Vladimir had told me that he wants to fight in America badly, but he can't get any opponent. And he, you know, and so I had told him that I did mention it to Henry, and Henry told me clearly that they want to wait to 2012 before they fight with Vladimir. And that's been the case for nearly everyone. It's, even though he's the champion, no one wants to fight, and that's why he may end up fighting a Marmek. He says, I don't want to fight a Marmek, but it's almost nobody wants to fight. He told me that they spoke to Arminius, and this whole, he gave me the list of all of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, because I wanted him to fight Arreola, because Francia, I think he needs to get back and reconnect with the American fans, the fight mm-hmm. to be in America. And also, I think that Chris still has the size and the still the spirit that may force Vladimir to have to come out of his comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
where he controls everything so easily with just with his left jab. Chris would make him have to fight. And like the same, I thought Vitaly's best performance was with Chris Arreola, because Chris made him fight, made him have to work. And I think he would do the same thing with Vladimir, but Vladimir is not as big as, you know, Vitaly's about maybe a couple of inches taller than his brother. And also, you know, just getting closer to Vladimir, I think, is going to make him have to fight a little bit more, because he's been so easy to controlling people with his footwork and his jab. Not just his jab, but he has good footwork. He can move in and out. But a guy the size of Chris, he would not be able to control that much, and Chris would make him have to fight a little bit.
Cool. Well, I enjoyed our time. We got another guest coming on, Manny. I really appreciate you coming on. It's always an honor to have you on, and I hope that we get you back on soon.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love being on the show.
Oh, thank you very much, Manny, and good luck. And I'm sure we'll see you on HBO. When's the next time you're going to be on HBO?
I'll be out in LA next. I'm leaving next Thursday.
Okay, then I'll see you, because
I'll see you
Saturday then, Manny.
I'm coming out on the 12th or the 13th. I'm going to, yes.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks a lot, Manny.
Okay, all right.
All right.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Manny.
For those who are listening who really could not hear Manny too well, I do apologize for the audio. It looked like it was phone. I tried to adjust the volume on it. I couldn't do anything on this point. I heard him if I had it all the way up, and that just kind of made me scream, me, Ryan, and Lewis kind of scream a little bit. But what I did hear was fantastic stuff, and it's very nice to hear him essentially break down what happened with Cotto, what the game plan he would have instilled in Cotto as far as beating Margarito. And I don't know. I mean, he sounded a little bit upset over the situation, and I know he said he's good with it, but I don't know, Lewis, did he sound a little bit more perturbed than what he let on?
Yeah, he did sound a little bothered by it, and, you know, I think it's still fresh. You know, it just happened, so I think he's still a little bit upset about it. And, you know, I think he's a little disappointed. I think he was probably looking forward to that fight. It was a big fight. But the good thing is he'll be there ringside calling the fight, so, you know, he'll still be able to see what's going on.
Yeah, and, you know, I do think that, you know, we'll discuss this in a bit, but I do think this was a highly questionable move, and you know, and he made it clear, perfectly clear, it wasn't about money, that it had already been discussed, and hopefully, who knows, maybe they turn it around and get him back into the corner after this, but I agree with Manny. I think, you know, 7 weeks is plenty. I've seen fighters go through less camps and have just as effective of a training camp, you know, so I really kind of questioned the timeline that the Cotto team wanted against Manny, because they knew going in was, you know, what the circumstances were in regards to Manny's circumstances. He had Andy Lee, you know, October 1st, and I'm sure he would have been available, and he actually said that he was ready to fly out when he got the call, and that's an unfortunate thing. And as anybody knows me, knows that I work for Margarito, Margarito's co-manager from time to time. I don't want to see, any of his opponents at a disadvantage. And I honestly think that not having Manny in his corner is somewhat of a disadvantage for Cotto, because I think that does create a little bit of turmoil. Oh man, we're just going to jump right into from one guest to the other. We have, like I said, we have a stacked show today. We're going to get Tavoris Cloud on in a bit. Ryan, what did you think of the call? What you could hear?
I could hear it all. I turned my volume up all the way. I think it's more the people who are listening on their phones, but. Yeah, I definitely seemed like there was a little bit of, I don't know if it's bitterness, but more like disappointment in his voice that he's not training Cotto for probably what's the biggest fight in Cotto's career.
It's the most important, I would say that.
Yeah, and the part about the training camp, I mean, you still have the 7 weeks of actual boxing training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, Phil Landman's going to be out there for 2 weeks, so he really has a 9-week camp. The first 2 weeks are all conditioning, so I don't see any issue there. And Vlad would have moved his fight back to accommodate Manny and Cotto. But, maybe there's more to it if we were to speak to, the Cotto side. But I personally don't think it's a good move to switch to a trainer and use him for the very first time in your career before the most important fight in your career.
Yeah, I agree. I'm lost.
He seemed a little bit worried about the weight, too.
Yeah, you know what? I do think... people seem to be kind of scared of Tony at a 54, clip. And he was a big, big man against Manny. I mean, we saw his last fight. He was massive. I mean, God. It's all the more amazing as to what Manny did to Tony to overcome such a size disadvantage. And, suffice to say, Cotto's not Manny. He's a bit slower. He's a bit. I don't think he punches as quick. I don't think his power is as devastating as Manny. So, he could be sitting there, once again as a target for Tony to come in and start, steamrolling him. And, I just hope that the trainer he got, and the name escapes me. I know his last name is Diaz Benitez, and if I'm recalling correctly, he trained Olandier Solis. I just hope this was a smart, educated choice and not one out of just either fiscal, responsibility or just because of you don't want to show you, then I'll show you. You won't come to my camp at all. Because if it's out of spite, then it's really unfortunate, because I really do think that the relationship between Cotto and Stewart was growing and was becoming really effective. So, but we got to move on. I'm going to see if I can get IBF. Light heavyweight champion of the world, Tavoris Cloud on. Let me dial him up. God, we don't even have time. I don't even know you guys. I can't even talk to you guys anymore. Maybe we'll get over there in between Tavoris and Paulie.
That's when Quillen's going to be on.
Oh, yeah. We got Petey on at 7.
No breaks, man. No breaks.
Let's leap for the wicket.
Hello?
Tavoris.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's going on, champ?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good, man. You've now entered the boxing lab. I'm your boy Ernie, and I'm joined by Ryan and Lewis out there.
Okay. How everybody doing?
How's it going, champ?
How you doing, man?
All right.
So, all right. How's everything going, man? What you been up to? You've been awfully, awfully quiet for about a minute here. I mean, we don't even know where you've been.
Well, I've been at home handling my business, as a husband and a father. As far as landing the big fight, it's right now it seems like, we're unable to do that at this present moment. However,
now,
you will see me in the ring by the end of the year.
So now, is it without, getting into, your personal business, is it more of the side of the business aspect of things that's holding you back, or is it something more than that? Is something a little deeper than that?
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, in terms of why you haven't fought for so long, Is it more something to do with the, with I guess maybe the promoters or the system that is, or is it just kind of the waiting game? No one kind of wants to fight you.
I think it's a little bit of everything. You know, me personally, I just believe I'm working against spiritual principles and principalities. You know, and I just gotta wait my turn to be the great fighter that I want to be recognized as.
Yeah. Now, when you grabbed the belt, when you took it into your hands and you possessed that belt, did you think it would end up like this, to where, you know, people don't say your name when they mention possible fights at 175? In terms of the top tier, they kind of mention you, you know, but they don't really say, well, you know, this is a guy we all want to see. Is it frustrating for you to say, hey, you know what, I got this damn belt, and I can't do a damn thing with it?
Yeah, it used to be frustrating, you know, when, you know, most people think when you become world champion, you become rich, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. You still have to fight for purses, and you still have to work very hard until you get where you want to go. I know I made myself a player in the light heavyweight division by being like the IBF champion and by defending my title three times. You know, they don't have to call me out. They don't have to mention my name, but sooner or later they're gonna shout it.
Hey, Tavoris, this is Louis Sandoval. Thanks for being here. My question is, how happy are you right now with your promotional situation? You know, you only fought once in 2009. You only fought once this year. Do you think you could be put in the ring a little bit more than you are now, and is that one of the problems that you're facing?
Well, definitely. I don't have a problem with my promoter, Don King. I think he's a great promoter. I think I could be in the ring more, but I can be in the ring more with, you know, taking the same risk as fighting a credible fighter as I take fighting a non-credible fighter. You know, being champion, you know, none of these guys, you know, are coming to give you an easy win. Everybody fights hard when they want to be champion of the world, when they're fighting for the title. You know, so I could be in the ring a lot more, but you know, why not be in the ring and be smart, you know, business-wise and financially.
And, you know, speaking of those big fights, you know, what are some of the names that you would want in the ring? If you could just pick anybody right now to fight with them before the end of the year, regardless if they have a fight right now or not, what name do you want?
I would want to knock out Hopkins, because Hopkins is the biggest name out there. The man is the oldest fighter to ever live. you know, he has all the belts because these guys that he fights, they let him get inside of their heads and talk them out of their fight game. You know, I don't believe Hopkins can do that to me. And even if he tried, I'd never let him do that to me. And that's the guy that I would want to fight. That's the guy that I would want to fight, because I don't think it's so much of when Hopkins fights these fighters, I don't think it's so much of a skill issue or an experience issue. But you can't call the skill and you can't call the experience, but he's using psychological warfare against these guys, and they don't understand it. I don't think they understand how to handle a guy like Hopkins, but I have the solution for Hopkins.
And another fighter who's going to be fighting him is Chad Dawson. I know you've been trying to fight him as well. What do you think about that fight? What do you think is going to happen? What is your prediction, and how do you assess that fight?
I think Hopkins wins. Hopkins wins by unanimous decision if he doesn't knock Dawson out. You know, I believe the fight will be boring. You know, Dawson, He's not an exciting fighter. He stays on the outside. He really doesn't want to engage. And, you know, Bernard Hopkins, he's not going to fight until he wants to fight, until he gets comfortable inside of the ring. But I'm going for Hopkins for this fight. You know, I choose Hopkins to win this fight just because I don't like Dawson. I don't like Bernard Hopkins either, but, you know, I think Bernard Hopkins get inside Dawson's head.
Wow, I don't like Bernard Hopkins.
Devorah, this is Ryan Burton here. I wanted to ask you, you and John Pascal, it seemed like we're close to a fight, and then that kind of fell apart, but you guys engaged in a little war on Twitter. What was that all about?
Pascal, with whatever social community I go to, he follows me. That's what that's about. He follows me on Twitter. He follows me on Facebook. But he tries to follow me on Facebook, you know. And, you know, Pascal, he's a funny guy to me. He's a funny guy to me. You know, all I want to do is make the fight. All I want to do is make the fight. You know, if I'm the champion of the world and they want me to come to Canada and bring my title up there to fight him in his country where I can't get robbed at, they don't want to give me no money off the gate and don't want to give me a rematch, this man, he ain't trying to make the fight. He ain't trying to make no damn fight. That's probably the biggest fight me and Pascal are going to have right there, the fight we had on Twitter. He ain't trying to make
Well, and you know what the sad part is? That's the fight, honestly, probably most of the fans, at least the hardcore fans, would like to see. Just your guys' style would be an absolute war in the ring. It's too bad that that can't happen. You think he's scared to fight you?
I actually don't believe he's scared, but I don't think he's anxious. I don't think he's excited to fight me either. I don't blame him because, you know, I knocked tears out of his ears.
And going back to your last fight, I was out there in St. Louis when you knocked out Yusef Mack. How would you rate that performance? You'd been out of the ring about, I think, close to 7 months when you had that fight, and it seemed like it took you a couple rounds to get going.
Mm-hmm. I rate that fight a C. But, you know, Yusef Mack, he's another dumb fighter. He came to the fight and told everybody his game plan. You know, before we even got in the ring, and when he got inside the ring, that's exactly what he did. He ran like a he ran like a baby. You know, until he got caught. That was his plan. Run, box and move, and don't stand still. If you watch the fight, you hear guys hollering and yelling in the corner, saying, "Don't stand there, get out of there, move." You know, and you know it's all fun and games until somebody get caught.
And
all these other fighters in the light heavyweight division, I put their ass in the air just like I put Yusef Mack's ass in the air.
I got to ask you a question just about boxing in general. You're one of the most exciting fighters out there, especially in the higher divisions. I'd say especially light heavyweight on up, where a lot of these guys, even the heavyweights, don't really want to really go in there and bang, which is what you do. You're a TV-friendly fighter. Why don't we see you on TV so much? It has to be more than just, you know, not being able to go to Canada because they're not going to give you, you know, enough money. I mean, you're the type of fighter I would think Showtime and HBO would want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and they do. Right now, if I'm recalling it right, I believe HBO has several opponents set up for me to choose from, and I should be fighting on HBO. More than probably in December. Slipped my mind. What was the question again?
Just what do you think is holding you back? I mean, it's, you know, you read and people say, oh, Don King, you know, wants options on the other fighters. You get all these excuses, but you're the type of fighter like a Brandon Rios, like some of these other guys who come to fight, come to bang. That's what the fans want to see. That's what the networks want. There has to be, you know, more to it than why we're not seeing you on TV more often.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, my promoter is a smart businessman. And what I have come to the conclusion of is that you know, like I told Don before, I don't, you know, he's going to do his job as a promoter, but I do not want to be a protective fighter. You know, I want to go out there and get the people what they want. Not that Don is protecting me, because we're trying to get fights with the big names. But if the only way that I can get to where I'm trying to go, which is to be that superstar in the light heavyweight division, is to fight every 2 or 3 months, that's what I would do. That's what I would do until one of these bitches in the light heavyweight division man up and fight me. Next year I plan to have 20 fights. I plan to fight every week. I'm planning on fighting every week next year. I can't wait on them.
You know what, Tavoris, you're my new favorite fighter, man. Hey, let me ask you a question. Let's go back to the Hopkins fight with you. Break it down for me. What would Tavoris Cloud do stylistically to Bernard Hopkins? Since he's the top guy, he seems to be the smartest fighter out there, according to people. What would you do to break him down and bust up Bernard Hopkins?
I will fight my style. I will fight my style. I would not let Bernard Hopkins get inside of my head. Every dirty trick Bernard Hopkins does, I do it to him. And I hit him harder. He'll leave out the ring in a wheelchair.
Oh, man. Would you stop him? Would you be the first man to stop Bernard Hopkins?
I believe so.
So, I mean, let's break it down. You said you want to fight once a week, essentially, next year. You want to get 20 fights in.
Yeah.
At this point, is it enough to unify before you move up? But can you see a Tavoris Cloud at cruiserweight, or can you maybe even eyeball 168?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been 178, 175 for 13 years, so. There's no way I'm going down, but I will move up. And if these heavyweights can't knock out the Klitschko's, I damn sure do it.
You would go all the way up to heavyweight?
Yeah, I would.
Ooh.
I would. Man. I make weight easy.
Wow.
I'll make weight easy. I'll take time off and train and do it right. I'll move up. I will fight Klitschko.
And unlike everybody else who kind of freezes under the Klitschko power, you wouldn't be afraid, huh?
No, it's the I don't give a damn attitude. You know, fighters, they talk a good game, you know, which I don't talk. I don't really express myself a lot, but you know, I gotta break out of it because you know. They're not giving me the fights. You know, I'm not getting the fights. You know, so I got to do something. I'm going to say something. I feel like the light heavyweight division is full of a bunch of bitches, you know, and it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So, I mean, look at the Klitschko fight with, what's the guy's name? Klitschko just beat,
Adamant?
No, not Adamant. But Adamant got beat, too. Who?
The guy that hurt his toe?
David Haye. David Haye, you know, guys, they talk a good game when they get in there. And David Haye, I used to be a sparring partner with David Haye back in the day. David Haye is a good fighter, but he didn't bring that fight into the ring with him. You know, it's like, you know, when you get in there, when you get inside the ring with another fighter, no matter how big he is, no matter how great he is, You still have to have that fight inside of you because it's never the size of the dog. It's always the size of the fight in the dog.
Man, Tavoris, you bring in – you know what? I'm going to say this. We're going to wrap it up right now. I'm going to say this, though. This was awesome. You're not mincing words. You're not backing up.
Back on.
Yeah, in fact, you need to come back on. When you secure a fight, promise me one thing, my man. You get to come back on and tell the Boxing Lab who you're going to fight, right?
Okay, you'll know. I might forget about it because I stay busy, and, you know, just hit me on Facebook or Twitter, and I'll catch up with you.
Yeah, you know what? Don't change your numbers either.
Hey.
Let me ask you one question.
That's why I tell you Facebook or Twitter.
And let me ask you one question, because someone asked me on our Boxing Lab chat. A fight with Beyboot Shumanov. Of course, you know he is. He's a titleist as well. Would mm-hmm. you, one, accept it, and two, what would you do to this guy?
What would I do to this guy?
Yeah, Beyboot. You know who Beyboot Shumanov is, right?
Yeah, I know who he is. Shumanov was a good amateur fighter. Shumanov should not be champion as right now because, you know, Capello beat him. He's a tall fighter that he fights tall, but he fights on the inside too much. If he doesn't find himself and find what his style is, I know he's an Olympian, and he can probably do it all, but he's better at one thing than he is at the other. But he has to find that. If he doesn't find himself, I'm going to come along and I'm going to guide him in the right path. And I'm going to put him on the path too, and he's going to find out that, you know, what style he should be fighting.
Is it kind of safe to...
He should be in quiet style or the running and ducking style.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Is it safe to say that inactivity is probably the lone enemy you have in the sport?
It's the only enemy I have?
Yeah, the only true challenge you have in this sport is the inactivity you're experiencing?
No, actually, the inactivity isn't my enemy. It's my friend because, you know, I'm like a gator in the water, and I'm waiting to eat a big fish. You know, I've got to constantly catch these little damn fish. I'm not getting full. I'm not satisfied. So, you know, the gator, he has, you know, killer instinct and stuff like that, and when he finally does get it, he gonna rip it apart. He gonna rip it apart. He gonna put the death roll on it, and that's what I'm gonna do when I get one of these big fishes in the light heavyweight division.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on, Tavoris, and like I said, I will remind you when you get a fight to come on and talk about this fight and talk about your plans for domination of the light heavyweight division. It's been a real pleasure to have you on, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as we do, because I certainly did enjoy it.
Okay. All right.
All right, Tavoris, take care of yourself.
Call me when you get ready. Call me when you get ready. I got a million of them.
I'm sure you do, brother. Take care, man.
All right.
Thanks, Tavoris. Hey, Tavoris, give him your Twitter address so the fans can follow you.
Yeah. Tavoris.
You gone?
Oh, I think so. Well, anybody who's out on Twitter, I am Ener0919. Ryan is at Ringside Rider. Lewis, who dropped off unexpectedly, is at TrueWest007. And the fighter you just heard, Tavoris Cloud, is at Tavoris Cloud, all one word. You know what? Since we've got a little bit of time before Petey Quillen comes on, let's talk a little bit about this past weekend's fight, most notably the HBO card, where we saw Andy Lee come out victorious in his rematch against Brian Vera. And Sergio Martinez, that was Lewis, he's back on, so I'm going to get him back on. And Sergio Martinez having, I guess, maybe a tougher-than-expected fight against Darren Barker. I'm going to throw it to you, Ryan. I'm going to see if I can get Lewis back on. Let's talk about the first fight. Let's talk about Lee Vera. Were you surprised at how well Lee was able to handle Vera?
Not too terribly surprised. I mean, I think Lee's just the better fighter. I think he kind of just had a bad day the first day. And, he went in there. He took a few good shots from Vera. Just Vera doesn't really have the boxing ability to put it together consistently if Lee sticks to his game plan. So, I mean, I was actually very impressed by Andy Lee in that fight. I don't know if he's ready for Sergio Martinez, but I was definitely impressed with him in that fight.
Yeah, and you know what? I did too. And Lewis, are you back on?
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you can turn it down just a tad. You're fantastic.
I don't think I can help it on this computer. It's a different computer.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, you sound a lot better.
Okay, good, good. What are you guys talking about?
We were discussing the Lee versus Vera rematch and how well Andy Lee handled Brian Vera. I personally was a little bit surprised, simply because I thought Vera's pressure would overwhelm Lee again. But I was actually quite impressed with Andy Lee and the way he came out and the way he stayed composed and calm. And even though Brian would try to rush at him, he stayed the course, and he won an easy decision, an easier decision than I expected, Lewis.
Yeah, he had a great performance. They stuck to the game plan, kept the right distance. Whenever Vera would come in, Andy Lee would tie him up. So it was a very disciplined performance. And you know what? The only thing I didn't like was I thought Lee still got hit with a few too many right hands by Vera, and I think that's what made the fight interesting, that you know, you always kind of hope, but you're waiting, like, what if he lands that one punch that changes the fight again? And it never came, but it was a good performance by Andy Lee.
Yeah, and you know, like Ryan kind of said, I don't think he's ready for a Martinez fight, but, I mean, is there anybody who's truly ready for a Martinez fight? And given as barren of a wasteland as middleweight is, I mean, is he... suffice to say, is he the best that we got for middleweight as a challenger?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that today, and it might be it, man. I mean, Sergio's only thing he can do is either go up to 168, where there are a lot of great fights, but I know his team already said he's not going to 168.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he can keep fighting the guys at 160, and, I mean, Andy Lee's probably the best he can get down there.
Yeah, so, I mean, if that's the fight, and like Manny Stewart said before, you know, when he came on, they're looking at maybe the first quarter of 2012 for Andy Lee versus Sergio Martinez. Now, let's get on to the main event of this before we get Petey Quillen on. The main event saw Sergio Martinez in a title event against as high as a 26-1, but I think the odds dropped down to a 15-1 underdog in Darren Barker. Now, a lot of people kind of, because of what they saw, essentially what they didn't see in Barker, because there's not a lot of tape on it, not a lot of people have seen him. You know, they kind of poo-pooed this fight and said that, you know, this wasn't a true challenge. But, you know, Barker was about as steadfast a fighter, as steadfast in his opponent as we've seen since maybe the first T-Will fight. And while he lost, and I think, you know, at times he really got dominated, he showed some things to me that kind of, you know, I suspected about Martinez all along. Not necessarily... The thing that kind of troubles me is that people are now saying he's exposed, he's not a true pound-for-pound guy, this and that. What I saw was a guy who still, you know, who's had it kind of easy for a little bit of a stretch and is allowed or allotted an off time, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I give Barker credit. He knew how to fight in a way that he could, you know, survive most of the fight and actually was effective with some of his punching, but I don't see that style beating Martinez.
No, I don't either, but at the same time, one thing that, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people like to say he was exposed, but the one thing I will say, that there are some, maybe some things that we hadn't seen because he's had it so easy, he's had such an easy time against some of the opponents he's had. The one thing that I came away with, and the one underlying thing that I did, and I'll kick it to you, Lewis, is that Martinez seems like a very impatient guy. He doesn't like waiting for his shots. He doesn't like. He seems more along the lines that if it's not there, he's going to go try to take it. And I think he really overextended himself at times, and Barker was able to capitalize on countering. Now, a guy who stays in the pocket and stays the course, can he maybe pose a bigger threat than, say, Barker, Lewis?
You know, probably. You know, I noticed the same thing, too. You know, when Barker posed to be a tougher puzzle to figure out for Martinez, he kind of tried to overwhelm him with that, you know, activity, which, you know, most people thought it worked. I personally, I thought Barker did a pretty good job early on, maybe the first 4 or 5 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think he was winning the fight, but, you know, I don't think people are giving him enough credit. I've seen some people say that he barely won a round. And, you know, it is what it is. I thought he had a right game plan, but, you know, Martinez, I think that might be the way to beat him, because if you stand in the middle of the ring and try to trade with him, he's faster, he's awkward, he comes at different angles. You know, maybe if you keep a disciplined defense and, you know, work behind the jab and kind of like Barker did, but I think Barker kind of clamped up the second half when Martinez kind of figured him out. But
yeah.
I think that's the kind of style that you'll need to beat a Martinez.
So given that aspect and given that question, Ryan, who out there beats him?
I think Floyd Mayweather could beat him. I mean, which way are you looking? If he moves down to 154, 155, I could see Mayweather beating him. I think it would be a competitive fight, but I think that Mayweather has speed, and that's something that Martinez hasn't had to deal with yet. Or a guy that's really got some pop that can maybe tie him up on the ropes and rough him up. Possibly someone like maybe an Alfredo Angulo, because he's got the size. Margarito, I mean, he's beat him once. I don't know if he has enough left to do it a second time. But somebody like that might be able to get him. But if Martinez is on his game and he outboxes him, I would favor Martinez against both of those fighters. The only fighter out there that I'd probably favor against him is Floyd. But I'm just trying to think of anybody that really has a chance, period.
Yeah, I tend to think that, you know, according to the way Sampson kind of violently shook his head behind Sergio about the prospects of fighting Bernard at a catchweight anywhere, it sounds like they make no bones about not going to 68 and staying at 60, 54, even dropping down to 150 for a proposed Manny Pacquiao fight. So given the kind of window that he presented to us and saying he's not a 68 guy, you know, the one fight I would have loved to have seen had he still been closer to prime was maybe a guy like Felix Sturm to see what he could have done to kind of make Martinez get out of his shell a little bit, or, you know, kind of, you know, try to get Sturm out of his shell. But given the aspect that, you know, Sturm is clearly past his prime, not much out there. I would say maybe Floyd, but I think the weight would have to be agreeable to Floyd, something in the neighborhood of 52, you know, maybe even lower than that. You know, I know that Martinez has opined to the media that he would go down to 54 for Manny. I don't see why he wouldn't do the same for Mayweather, because essentially I think they're the same size. Maybe Mayweather's a slightly bigger guy than Manny. I don't know. I don't see anybody out there with enough discipline and a smart enough game plan to really pose too much of a threat to Martinez other than Floyd. Now, can he lose to other guys? Certainly. I really do think that guys like Angulo, if they catch Martinez coming in, which seems like what Barker was trying to do was catch Martinez on a right-hand counter as Martinez overshot his left. You know, there's guys out there that can expose things like that. There's guys, you know, with hand speed. I think Canelo has decent, you know, hand speed that can touch Martinez in a way. But to put it all together, it's going to take a hell of an effort, and I don't see anybody else who's out there. Before we jump on with Petey, well, you know what? Maybe we can try Petey. Why don't you guys discuss the Marquez-Nishioka fight while I grab his contact information?
Hey, Ryan, you were there, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
How was it from ringside?
Well, it was a pretty good fight. You know, the first, I'd say, four or five rounds, a little bit slow. They kind of fought in spurts. Marquez was stalking Nishioka, and Nishioka was content to counterpunch. But then I want to say about around the sixth round, it started to pick up. And then when they had that clash of heads, that seemed to, when Nishioka started bleeding from his scalp, that really seemed to, the wolf or the animal inside of Marquez was unleashed, and he really went after him and had his best couple of rounds. I thought the fight was close. A lot of people ringside had Marquez winning through 10 rounds. And then, Nishioka knew how to finish the show, and he, the last, I'd say, 10th round on, he really dominated.
Yeah, I agree. It was a great fight. I thought the first four rounds were pretty even. And then I thought from the fifth round on, I thought, you know, Marquez kind of started following Nishioka a little bit too much. And, those left hands were just coming right down the pipe. And I thought he was going to make adjustments. And I didn't see any, like you said, in the 10th round after the clash of heads. It kind of like woke him up a little bit, or kind of he sensed the urgency in it, and then kind of started, fighting with a little bit more urgency. But I don't think it was as close. I thought it was a clear victory, but it was still a good fight.
What I couldn't believe was, in the post fight press conference, Marquez was talking about how he knew he won at least seven rounds, and he got robbed. And his trainer, Daniel Caracosa, took it a step further and said that they.
Hello,
Peter.
Yeah.
What's up? You're on with the.
How you living?
Well, I'm living large, man. How are you? The question should be
living.
How
I'm living more large than two fat chicks in a buffet line, man.
Everybody who's on the air right now, you're on the phone with middleweight contender Peter Quillen, Kid Chocolate, the man, the myth, the legend.
Puro chocolate. Puro.
Yes. Puro
pure chocolate. Chocolate.
Like the trunk say, puro chocolate.
Yes.
Hey, so how's it going? I hear you're back in L.A.
I'm back in L.A., yeah. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling healthy and strong to be back here and, you know, be back in – I'm back in shape. I came back to camp, started my camp already in shape. You know, it's the best thing a fighter can do is be dedicated to what he does.
Cool. So now, after much talk, I mean, there was a lot of Twitter talk out there between you and amongst others, Ishae Smith and so forth. You did land a fight, and it's a good one. And to boot, it's on HBO.
Right.
Fighting Craig McEwen, November 5th, on the undercard of James Franklin versus Alfredo Angulo. Tell me how exciting it is for you to make your HBO debut.
I mean, it's like, you know, being younger and you know, first day of school, you want to go out there and show your best outfit, you know, look as best with your best attire. It's like that all over again. You know, I'm going in this fight knowing that I'm going to be fresh, I'm going to be ready, and I'm going to be fit, and I'm going to show these people why I've been screaming for bigger fights. It's because I'm hungry for this, man. I do nothing but boxing all day. I do boxing class to get back to boxing. I was in Colorado Springs helping Freddie out with the Olympic team, you know. My life is dedicated to boxing. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, fighting on HBO is one of the biggest platforms out there for a fighter. You know, so by all means, I'm going to look to shine on that day, November 5th.
Cool. So now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Craig McEwen also a wild card fighter?
Unfortunately, he's not in wild card anymore. More since his last fight and his defeat to Andy Lee. I guess he went back to Scotland, wherever overseas where he's at now, and he's training with a guy named Billy Nelson. That's who he's working with now. So, you know, it may be bad blood more for him, you know, having a bad situation at wild card. And to my recollection, he thought it wasn't a good situation at wild card for him. He's been with Freddie. I think when you're winning, you shouldn't complain by all means. You know, Freddie only could do so much to help you win victories. But it's all really up to the fighter. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, I'm dedicated. I don't get in shape when they tell me to get a fight. I'm in shape all the time. So if they do call me, I'm ready for anything they throw at me. You know what I'm saying? I only have, you know, for this fight, I took off a week. I was in my week off. You know, I'm thinking that I was going to get into a situation with Sam Solomon, and I was waiting for the date and the negotiations to be in play. And he put it out there like, I agree. Yeah, I did agree. I don't turn down nobody. You know what I'm saying? But it just got to be the best situation for me. And, you know, me fighting, getting ready for a belt, and, you know, ranking or TV, I asked for three things, money, some type of TV exposure, or, you know, some type of ranking. You know what I'm saying? So with this fight with Craig, what it does, it gives me some type of TV exposure so the people in the world can see who Kid Chocolate is all and what he's all about.
Cool. So now you're back at Wild Card. You're under the tutelage of Freddie. Do you start out your training in spite of Freddie? Because Freddie's still in the Philippines. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
So now go ahead.
Yeah, he's in the Philippines. So what happens is that Eric Brown, which has been handling me since, you know, me moving there. Freddie's been super busy, you know, with a lot of fights, Amir Khan, what you call it. So his schedule hasn't been freed up for me to, you know, get a full camp with him. But I have to honestly say, since moving out there, it's the best decision I ever made in my career. And not only helped me to become a better fighter, but it also helped me, you know, to look forward to the future. You know, Freddie, he puts 100% to make sure that I'm taken care of. And if that's with Eric Brown, I feel comfortable with the situation, me working with him. And like I said, when I step in there, nothing Eric or nothing that Freddie can do is going to help me more besides the little things that they tell you. But it's all up to the fighter. Like I said, it's my heart, it's my mind, it's my desire to be a champion that's going to pull off the victory.
And, Peter, talk about McEwen for a minute. I'm sure you saw his fight against Andy Lee.
I'm pretty sure I sparred him.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I sparred him. But you know,
go ahead.
About him in his fight with Andy Lee, basically, that's what I'm going to say. Okay, you can't put the gear on one speed the whole fight. You know, if you do that, then, you know, basically you're going to look to run into something. And that's what happened in that fight. He kept the speed, he kept the pace up like he was fighting an amateur fight, in my opinion. You know what I'm saying? He was doing very well. And, you know, it's coming off. Andy came about and won the victory with a knockout. And that's what people like to see, you know, a fighter to be losing and he all of a sudden come back and boom, there goes the knockout. So, you know, with that being said, you know, now people are going to try to measure my performance up with Andy Lee's performance, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm not going to speak about what I'm going to do or if I'm going to knock him out because I never do that. What I do say is that I work very hard for a victory to come my way, and I don't look at it no other way. So if he come and bring the fight to one gear, I'm going to take my time, and boom, there he goes. He might be out of there.
Right, and you mentioned the sparring. Obviously, you've seen him spar, and he's seen you since you sparred together, but we all know sparring is different than when you're in the...
Way different.
And you don't
way
have
different.
That gear on.
Way different.
And being that he's been knocked out, do you think that he might fight a more cautious fight? You mentioned how he was going, you know, at one speed the whole time. Do you think he might try to slow it down and fight a more technical fight this time around?
I mean, of course, if he's a smart fighter, yeah. That's why when people ask me, what do they think about what I think about Andy Lee? Never once called him a bum. Never once said anything personally about him. I said this. I said, and Craig McEwen, he's a great fighter. He's right now in a bad situation. He left wild card. He's coming off a loss. He wants to get right back in a situation that he was trying to get upon fighting Andy Lee. So I think him accepting a fight with me tells that he feels that he's ready. And maybe he do a lot of things different. So I rate him very dangerous. I think, you know, a guy like that with his back against the wall, that's like a rat. When you get him cornered, they're going to fight you. You know what I'm saying? So, by all means, I think Craig's going to come in there, and he's going to put everything on the line. You know what I'm saying? But he has a little bit more proven than I have to do. Everybody know I can be a winner. I'm 25-0, 19 knockouts. You know, Craig McEwen is 19-1. You know what I'm saying? 10 knockouts. So, by all means, he put a statement out saying that he was, not only do he think that he was going to give me my first loss, but he's going to knock me out. Now, if I was to say, now I'm going to knock Craig McEwen out, who would have more of a believable record to say that I got the knockout power? No, you know what? Craig McEwen, listen, you want to put on a good fight. November 5th, you're going to meet me in the middle of the ring, and we're going to see what it is. If you want to go blow for blow, we can do that. But you know what? I'm a smart fighter. I love being in there. I feel comfortable in the ring no matter who I'm in there with, and I'm going to just look for a victory no matter what it is. If you want to have a pressure to knock me out, then do what you got to do. A lot of people that I fought told me they was going to give me my first loss. And guess what? They still, you know, trying to catch up now since losing to me. You know what I'm saying?
And what do you hope a win over McEwen does? Who would you want to fight next?
Well, it's getting me hopefully closer to a title. You know, Sergio Martinez, as you've seen this week, you know, fought, you know, good performance. He knocked out. He gave people a knockout. A lot of, you know, a lot of boxing insiders would say that, you know, he looked like he was struggling for a victory. You know, he came out with the victory. That's all that counts. Hopefully I can get closer to him. I don't want to be disrespectful because that's what the media made me seem like. I'm being disrespectful to him. Now, if the media asked me, Peter, who would you like to see yourself fight? Why would I say I would like to see myself fight this guy, whoever it is, compared to a champion? If I say I want to fight a champion, why are people so, you know, taken back from that? Why are they looking at me like that's a bad thing? No, I feel like I'm ready for a championship, and I'm working very hard. Man, listen, I don't take no days off. I'm always in the gym. I'm always thinking about boxing. When I'm sleeping, I wake up throwing punches. You know what I'm saying? So this is always on my mind, man. So when I want to say who I want to fight, I would like to get closer to Sergio Martinez because, you know, I would like to beat him before anybody else beat him because I could take that title as him having all the credentials, pound for pound, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Now, Lou DiBella put out a statement saying that I had to fight P-Raw. You know, why are you trying to throw me off on other fighters and say, fight this guy, then you get Sergio Martinez? Those guys, Demetrius P-Raw put out a statement saying, I don't have to fight him. I can fight Sergio right now. You know what I'm saying? He is a champion. And, you know, all my hat goes off to the champions. But I'm hopefully going to get my break. with this fight, you know, I get some exposure time, and, you know, I can have a little bit more side of what people see, what kind of fighter I am.
Hey, Peter, this is Luis Sandoval. You know, speaking of Sergio Martinez, what was your assessment of his performance this weekend, and did you see anything that you could take advantage of? A lot of people are saying he didn't have such a great performance. What did you see?
I see that he's a very cocky fighter. You know, the first rule in boxing is put your hands up. Put your chin down. That's what you learn when you first get in the gym. Put your hands up, put your chin down. Now, he's been very cocky. If he's really that cocky to be putting his hands down and boxing the whole fight like that, all right, I understand if that's the style, but, you know, a big puncher like me, that's something you don't want to do, you know what I'm saying? Or any big puncher, you know what I mean? It's other big, you know, punchers that's it could be a risk of keeping your hands down, like Geneda Golovkin. You know, it's a lot of tons of other guys out there you don't want to be putting your hands down with. And I think, by all means, when people make guys and fighters look like Superman, they're really not Superman out here. Even Superman had kryptonite. So I don't put any man above myself. You know what I'm saying? I could just say, all at this level, all it really matters is who's working harder than the next person, who really wanted more, who has more of a heart, who has more of the fist, who has more of the mind to go in there and close out the show and have a victory. Now, as far as Darren Barker, he showed a lot of things that, you know, exposed Sergio as far as boxing wise. He had a little good boxing skills, a little bit movement. I thought he was in the fight, and I think, you know, blocking the shot, why even block a shot and you block it and you get hit damn near through your gloves and you go down and don't even attempt to get up unless that punch was that super hard. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, by all means, it was a fight. I think Sergio should be happy with his performance. He did go out and close out the show with a knockout, and I think that's what every fighter wants. So I really can't say too much about him, but besides him being the world champion, you know, I want to fight him soon, and hopefully that fight can be made. You know what I'm saying? But right now, since that fight is not on the table for me, I have to look to, you know, get fights that they be able to can get me closer to that. So, like I said, I never say no to fights. You know what I'm saying? I just want to be able to be put in the best situation in my life by doing this. You know, this is at the end of the day, this is my job. This is how I earn a living. So I have to make sure I'm making the right decisions when it comes to this.
And, you know, you mentioned Craig McHugh on Left Wild Card. He didn't feel he was getting the attention from Freddie Roach. How do you deal with that, with Freddie having so many big fights? How come it's not a problem for you, and what kind of training are you going to get for this camp and for this fight coming up?
I'm going to get in hard work like I always do. I look at every guy like it's the same. I look at every guy like they're a champion. I don't take away from no fighter because I know one punch can change the fight. Now, as far as Freddie goes, Freddie has helped me get a lot better by offering his gym, offering his services, offering his assessment of what I need for my boxing career. He put Eric Brown could be, I could say, just as good as Freddie. You know, him working with me, he's in the trenches with me. That's all I really care about, is that I get the attention that I need as a fighter. Now, Freddie is not being there, doesn't what you call it. I didn't move there strictly to think that I'm going to be, you know, fucking, I mean, I'm sorry for my language, but Freddie's, you know, his, how you can call that word, his star boxer. You know, I know I have a lot of things to work on, and I know that they're working hard to make me happy to go ahead and let me accomplish those things that I want done in boxing. So as far as Freddie, like I said, Freddie can help me, you know, a lot, but it's going to really narrow back down to me, you know, how much do I want it? And I think that's what really counts. Now, Craig, yeah, I was with him. I trained with him. I seen how he trained. You know what I'm saying? Do he train like me? I don't think nobody hard train harder than me. When I look at Floyd Mayweather, I'm inspired by those guys. When I see Manny Pacquiao, I'm inspired by those guys. So every chance I get, Freddie, what do Manny Pacquiao does when he's not boxing? Oh, he's doing something. He's playing basketball. He's staying in condition. You know what I'm saying? So I think me picking up those things with Freddie, you know, helps me out in the long run.
And, you know, one thing, when people hear you call out Sergio Martinez, they say, well, who have you beaten? What names do you have? What do you think makes you, you know, ready for those fights? Why do you think you're ready, and why do you think you're the best in the division?
All right. You get a guy, he's been boxing, and he goes 3 years. He goes in there, and he boxes, and he fights for the world championship after 3 years. Now, me, I haven't fought for no world title, and I've been boxing pro since 2005. It's 2011, about to be 2012. I'm polished. I'm experienced. I have 25 fights underneath my belt. I'm hungry more than ever. I have gained a lot of wisdom when it comes to boxing. This is the best time for me to win a championship right now. I'm in my prime. I'm feeling fit and ready, man. You know what I'm saying? And by all means, I'm not just babbling with words, man. I put hard work behind whatever I'm telling you guys right now. You know, y'all can be welcome to see. I just got done working in Santa Monica with my conditioning trainer, Brad Bowles, right now, 90-minute session with him. You know what I mean? This is my first day with him. And he's like, yo, you don't even look out of shape. And I'm saying, I'm not, because I'm always in shape. You know what I'm saying? I'm always working hard. And that's what it takes for a champion. Now, as far as a true champion, meaning like a guy that can go down and get back up and still pull out the victory, I haven't proved myself yet. So that's a lot of people's and a lot of doubters would say about me. So they want to match me up with the best fighters out there. They want to put me up in there with King Kong. But it's not about being in there with King Kong. It's just to see if you can beat him. Like I said, I look at this boxing as a totally different thing for me. It's a job for me. It's a business. And that's how it is ran. So I have to respect that part of boxing. And I can't just go up in there and think that I'm going to go up in there and beat everybody, beat this guy up, beat him up, and don't make no money. You know what I'm saying? So, like I said, for a boxer, it has to make all the sense in the world for fights to happen. I think I never said no to fights unless it was in a good situation. You know what I mean? Lucien Boutte. Yeah, they called me, but why should I have to fight in another weight class that I don't see myself competing in? Or if I win a belt at 168 pounds right now, that's something I'm not ready to compete at right now. I'm not ready to defend my belt at 168 pounds. You know what I mean? I'm walking around 172 outside of training. You know what I'm saying? So that doesn't make any sense. So a guy to rehydrate and goes back in, when he goes step into fight night, he's a cruiserweight. And me, I'm still, a super middleweight? You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense. So I just don't say yes to any opportunities out there. And a lot of people want me to see me do that, but I'm not gonna do that because I'm putting everything on the line when I go out there. You know what I'm saying? And I don't think it's right now. It's going to be at 168 pounds. I think all my performance is going to come for next couple years at 160 pounds. And I'm gonna go out there and put everything on the line. And hopefully they can catch on to where I really am as a fighter.
Peter, it's Ernie again. Let me ask you a question. You made the transition from the East Coast back over to L.A. Has it also, as you've made the transition from, you know, the mentality you had in the East Coast to kind of the laid-back mentality you have in the West Coast, is it also kind of a change in everything as to how you approach the game or maybe how the game approaches you?
I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Originally, I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I was born in Chicago. My father's from Santiago de Cuba. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So my father went, when he came from Cuba, stayed a week in Miami, then went to Chicago, met my mom. I was born 6 months of age, moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, from that time to 18 years old, my dad, I had a lot of stuff for a young kid to go through. My dad went to prison 6.5 years in federal penitentiary. My mom was on welfare, bringing up four boys on her own. My older brother was trying to do what he can to make sure that we went to school fresh. You know, it was hard for me, you know what I'm saying? So once I got to an age and I said, you know, I need to step out of the boundaries. I need to figure out. And I talked to one of my best friends, his name is Johnny Perez. He'll tell you truthfully what I asked him. I said, do you think I should, if I had an opportunity to move to New York, would you think I should do it? He says, I think you should do it because you're fighting on the streets a lot. A lot of people know you a boxer. They ain't going to keep fighting you for long. They're going to end up shooting you. So you should get out of here and pick the opportunity. So when I went to New York, I said, I need to make three things important. I need to make boxing. I need to make God. I need to make, you know, my education important in my life. You know what I'm saying? You know, real rough time when I moved to New York. I was homeless. I was sleeping on a mattress that I found in the trash. And one of my good friends in New York, his floor in a one-bedroom studio apartment. You know what I'm saying? I didn't go home. I didn't give up. I just had the desire to say that I want to make it in something. And boxing, I put there as something I knew I'm talented at. I just need the right people surrounded by me. So, you know, I got, you know, my manager who's been with me my whole career. And, you know, he's been, you know, trying to make sure that I'm happy doing this. So when you say I conquered New York, everybody knows me there. I can walk on the street, and I'm not saying that everybody's going to know who Kid Chocolate is, but I may have a few people say, oh, you look familiar. And I'm going to say, yeah, I'm a boxer. I'll be on the TV a few times. Oh, I remember your name is, I said, Kid Chocolate, Peter Quillen. You know what I'm saying? right there tells you right there that I really want to be, you know, known amongst the people and inspired. So when they say taking over New York, now moving to California, you know, that means that I'm not stopping chasing my dream. I'm still chasing my dream. I moved to California, and it has helped me got better. I think this is a better atmosphere, better environment for a fighter. You know, it's a very hot in the gym that I'm training at. It's like one of the hottest gyms in America right now. You know what I'm saying? So I get all the sparring that comes through that gym. I get to spar world-class fighters. So, you know, like I said, everything is about the timing, about your dedication. And right now, as you can see, me being 25-0, I haven't given up yet.
Cool, Peter. Tell me.
Did I get to answer your question?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry if I'm babbling. I could probably answer 30 questions at one time. I'm sorry.
It's okay, man. Anybody who's dealt with you knows that, you know what, you have the gift of gab, and you don't pull no punches, and it is what it is.
It is what it is. I can sell mittens to a guy with no hands. You know what I'm saying?
November 5th, break it down in 2,000 words or less. I'm just playing with you. But, yeah, break down the fight between you and McEwen, brother.
All right. You know, McEwen comes. He lowers me, puts me he puts me on a rope. I roll with the punches. I throw the right hand, boom, hit him. He get discouraged. Now he backpedals. Unless he feels like he want to be a fighter again, I keep doing the same thing, bam, 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 boom. Show is closed by a victory because I work so hard to go out there and perform well and show these people that's where I'm meant to be. Craig is looking for opportunity for money. I don't put my legacy before the money. All right, if I put my legacy first, the money will come behind it, and I respect that. You know what I'm saying? I don't think this guy even got respect for that. I think right now, you know, he's on a bad slate right now, and I said I'm still going to look at him like he's a champion. I'm still going to train with him. But I think it's going to be a very entertaining fight because he's the type of guy that's going to come in and put everything on the line right there, and I'm going to do the same thing. So November 5th, when you see us, you're going to be like, damn, you know what? I knew Kid Chocolate was good, but damn, this fight right here shows us that he's really ready for the top-level guys.
Awesome. So live on HBO, November 5th, we're going to get to see the HBO debut of Peter Kid
Chocolate Quillen. If they don't like chocolate, I'm changing my name to Kid Cornbread. Straight up. Kid Cornbread.
You're on the West Coast now. You got to be Kid Taco or maybe
Kid Taco, Grande Asada. You know what I'm saying? Kid Tamale. I like Kid Tamale. How you like that one?
Kid Tamale works.
We got a winner.
Hey, PD, thanks for coming on, brother. And
man, thank y'all for having me, man.
And when you come back victorious, let's get you back on again.
Until, have Emmanuel Stewart already went on?
Yeah, he came on early. Right.
Damn, man, I wish I was y'all would have sent him my love, man. He spoke very high of me, and I really take my hat off to that guy, man.
You know what? He'll be back on again, and I'll relay the message to him, brother.
Thank y'all for having me on, man. I hope I got what y'all wanted out of me, man.
We got that and then some, man. Mm-hmm. Take care, brother.
Yeah.
All right, bro.
Speaking of tacos, we got Paulie Malignaggi on next.
Yeah, we got about 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Fox Sports, the Fortes. You know, where does Nishioka go from here, real quick?
Well, what he said in the press conference is he's going for a nice vacation. I mean, what I got out of him, it's a guy that's only got a couple fights left before he's done.
Really?
Because, he's 35 years old.
I didn't realize he was that old. I'm sorry.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't realize that there, but Bob Arum was already throwing him the pitch saying, hey, we want you back. You need to promise you'll come back, since it was his first title fight in the U.S., his third fight overall in the U.S. He said, I can get you. It was funny how he worded it. Something like, whatever nationality you want, I can get for you. I can get you Donaire, you know, Filipino. I can get you Arce for a Mexican, or I can get you Vasquez Jr. for a Puerto Rican. And his comment, translated by the translator, was, how many more fights do you want me to fight? And he started laughing. But to me, he said he doesn't want to fight again until May or June, and I think he's a guy with one or two fights left in him.
Does Rafa get anything out of this? I know he's claiming that, you know, he was robbed and that he clearly won and he wants a rematch. It sounds like sour grapes, but can he maybe parlay this into one more shot? I know a lot of people on Twitter We're kind of wishing that he would retire. I don't think it's in him. It doesn't sound like he's in him. Just determined by the way he sounded post-fight.
He's not retiring.
He's not going to retire. So, no. So what did we see him in? Did we see him with the, in a matchup against a guy like Johnny Gonzalez?
No, I don't think that either. I mean, he said 122 is his best weight. I think at this point, he's kind of like a B-plus fighter. He's not going to beat the top guys. And, you know, I don't want to call him a stepping stone. That's disrespectful to him. But he's at that point where, you know, I could see them do a fight. You know, if they don't get the rematch with Arce and Vasquez, maybe they do Vasquez and Marquez. Then the winner goes on to fight for a belt. I could see something like that happening.
Mm. Well, Lewis, I mean, what do you think? Do you think Rafael should? Do you think Rafa should continue on?
You know what? I really didn't like what I saw. I picked him to win this fight because I thought he still had a one good fight left in him, and I thought his boxing skills would eventually take over. But you know, I didn't like what I saw. I don't think he's gonna retire. I mean, if he thinks he got robbed, I mean, he thinks that, you know, he won the fight, he's gonna keep going. But I like to see him retire, man. I mean, I don't like to see these guys go past their prime. He looks like he's a little past it. I look a little slow in there. You know, I think the fight that I am excited about is Nonito, you know, against Nishioka. What is his name again?
Nishioka.
Yeah, I'd love to see that fight, man. I really want to see that fight. I'm kind of bummed out that he says he doesn't want to fight too much anymore. But if there's a fight that I want to see Nonito in, is that one. Because anytime I think of Nonito fighting somebody, the first thing that comes to my mind, excuse my language, is nobody can really fuck with him right now. You know, and
ooh,
I think...
I'm a hell mama.
And I think Nishioka actually brings a little bit more to the table. But as far as Rafa, you know, I just don't see him being competitive with the top guys anymore, man.
Bruh, we've had Brandon Rios on full bore, X-rated. It's okay. You can say fuck.
You know...
Hey, let me ask you this. So now, the co-feature for this was Chocolatito against Omar Soto, and he demolishes him in two rounds. And now he's calling out, you know, another lightweight, a little mini weight king in Giovanni Segura. I heard that he wants it at 108, which I don't think is anywhere near the possibility of Gio. Do you think this fight happens, Ryan? And two, what do you think your chances are with that?
No, the way I look at that fight is if Giovanni killed himself to make 108, like he especially did the second time he fought Ivan Calderon, Chocolatito would beat him because he just doesn't have enough at that weight to be able to move around enough to catch him and handle his punches. But I think if they fought at 112 right now, I think Segura would be too strong for him and would probably knock him out. So I think that's a fight we probably won't see for another year or two, because that's what Chocolatito told us, was that he has at least probably 4 or 5 more fights at 108 before he even thinks about moving up.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great fight. That's one fight that I thought of immediately that I wanted to see him in. You know, I would hope he would move up. Like you said, I know Segura's not going to come down. There's no way he'd come down. Not anymore, but you know, it was a shame we only got to see 2 rounds of him. But I like this dude, man. He's from Managua, Nicaragua, and you know, he has the skill, the power. He has, I think, it's a total package, man. I want to see him get tested, and it's the girl with a great fight.
I'm a huge fan of him. I got to be honest with you. I want to see more of him. I want to see him in the U.S. more. I want to definitely see him in bigger fights. Let's hope that they can come to some type of compromise and get this fight done, because I know that he wants to fight him in December. It would be awesome if they actually, you know, added it to December 3rd. What a pay-per-view that would be. You know, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's about that time. Let's see if Paulie answers his phone. Man, what a busy schedule. That's all good. I'm trying to bring... bringing you the best.
Hello.
Paulie.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, brother? You're on with the Boxing Lab.
Hey, what's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure as always. Hey, so how's training camp going? How's living in L.A.? How's the whole nine, man?
Everything's good, man. You know, I'm just moving along. Looking forward to next Saturday night. Just been putting in some work. And, this week and next week's worth of preparation, though. So just looking forward to fighting you. At a certain point, I kind of get sick of training.
Yeah, get to that time where fighters tend to be a little bit grouchier, a little bit more ornery. Does it affect you in that manner?
It used to affect me more when I was making junior welterweight. At welterweight, I don't get as grouchy making weight and stuff like that. So I'm pretty composed. I'm pretty focused. And I think that'll continue next week. You know, the last two training camps, I haven't been as grouchy as usual. So, my team around me has been more grateful to that as well.
Speaking of the team around you, what's it been like to transition everything kind of from the East Coast where you made your name, stamped your true legendary status amongst us, and moved essentially everything to the West Coast? And what kind of transition has it been? What kind of gym love have you gotten? I mean, is it a world of difference that you've seen?
Yeah, it's a little bit different, but I made the move for the benefit of my career, and I think it's paying dividends, you know, and the work in the gym is good. I've gotten to start working with my trainer, Eric Brown, who I think is a great trainer. And the work in the gym as far as the sparring and stuff, that was the main reason I came out west. And that's always been good as well. So it's a difference, but at this point it's more convenient and beneficial to my career.
Hey, Paul, this is Louis Sandoval. You've been signed to Golden Boy. Going to a bigger company like that and already being on a big pay-per-view, what difference have you noticed? You know, I know it's only, you know, started, but what difference have you noticed from signing to Golden Boy as opposed to the other promoters you were with before?
I just think the package Golden Boy is working with as far as an ex-world champion who's 30 years old who needs to sort of be rebuilt, at least on paper, is different than, say, the package of what anybody else had earlier in my career. Where it is, you had a 26, 27-year-old world champion, you know. So based on what they have to work with, I think they're doing an excellent job and in rebuilding me and in bringing me back to a level where I feel like I still belong and I feel like I still should be competing at. And I don't think there's too many promoters in boxing today that would be able to bring me back to that level, at least not on television and not in the public eye, you know. And Golden Boy is able to do that, and they are continuing to do that. And that is the main reason I signed with them to begin with.
And, another fighter they signed, of course, is Devin Alexander. There's a lot of talk going between you guys of a possible fight. I mean, has Golden Boy reached out to you and let you know that fight might be a real possibility next year? Or any word on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the possibilities. They have a lot of possibilities on the horizon. But that is definitely one of the possibilities that they're talking about. They have a welterweight tournament that they're talking about, which, you know, me and Devin may be involved in, but I might also have other fighters. So you see him mixing it up with a lot of other people. And then if I really had to get back down to junior welterweight, if a big fight presented itself, and only if a big fight presented itself, I would get myself back down to 140, but only under certain circumstances.
You know, you talk about the move to 147 has been good to you. What differences have you noticed physically and maybe even mentally moving up to 147 and not having to worry about cutting weight?
Even mentally I'm more relaxed and I'm able to focus more on the game plan and focus more on the opponent and the fight in general, as opposed to before where I was just like, I had to focus on the weight a lot. I mean, a lot in training camps. A lot of the training camps became surrounded around making weight. My mood is better. I'm keeping more of my energy, I think. You know, I think at the end of my 140-pound tenure, I was losing a lot of energy just trying to make the weight, you know, and I was leaving it in the gym. So, I think at 147, I feel like that extra spunk in my legs, so to speak, you know, and I'm able to, you know, keep energy level high. And for a guy who boxes like me, where I use a lot of movement and boxing ability, and I usually go a lot of rounds, that's important. And so I think in that way, in that regard, the move to welterweight was beneficial.
And like you said, you're working at Wild Card. I mean, that's like the mecca of boxing right now. There's a lot of activity going there, a lot of good fighters. Who's giving you your best work so far there since you got in there? I know you work with a lot of fighters. Who's giving you your best work?
I can't really say one person. We worked with a lot of different guys. Some fighters few may know, some fighters few may not know. But in this training camp, I work with Jose Benavidez. I work with Ray Beltran. I even worked with Mercedo Hesta one day. Even though he's a lefty, he needed some work, and we just throw him in as well. And, as far as those names boxing fans may know, and also just other fighters in general boxing fans may not know, you know, the gym is packed with potential sparring and a lot of sparring, and so anybody can always end up in the ring against each other working. And again, like I said, it's been very beneficial to me.
Hey, Paulie, Ryan Burton here.
Ryan, what's up, man? How you doing?
Not too bad, man. First question, this is going to be your first fight in L.A.
it's Golden Boy territory, but you're fighting a Mexican fighter in L.A. Talk about that, and you're going to be obviously
the
guy can shoot.
Yeah, I was joking around about that with some of my friends. I'm fighting in L.A., which is Golden Boy territory, but it'll probably be a pro-Mexican crowd, being that, L.A.'s the population is very Mexican. So fighting a Mexican out here, I probably will not be a fan favorite, but nonetheless, I've gone into hostile territory before, and I don't think it'll be any more hostile than anything I haven't already experienced, so I don't really worry about that. And I'm more focused on my opponent and my fight than I am about the crowd or anything like that.
And I know a lot of people don't know much about Orlando Lora, except for his fight against Estrada that I think was on Showbox. What can we look out for? What can the fans look out for on October 15th?
I don't know too much about him either, but I from making a video, I saw he tries to come out boxing and working in that regard. But, I also am a guy who's physically smaller than he is. He's fought a size junior middleweight, so I think he may try to impose himself physically on me. So I don't really know what to expect from him. When the bell rings, I'll find out. But I'm more focused on preparing myself and being ready for, being ready to do anything I need to do to win the fight. And when I'm sharp, I feel like I'm confident. I can be confident enough to beat anybody. So no matter what he brings to the table, I'll be ready for it.
And besides the possible tournament or a fight with Devin Alexander, we've also heard your name floated around as a possible in a possible fight with Victor Ortiz. Would that be a fight that interests you?
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know my name was being mentioned, Victor Ortiz. But yeah, I mean, any big name fighters, I'm always up for fighting. I'm a competitor. I like being in big fights because I like to test myself against other good fighters. I like the attention that brings. I like that big fights bring. I like to be the center of attention, but I like my fights being talked about, and I like my fights being an exciting part of the sport of boxing in general. So anytime I fight a big fighter, my fight becomes that as well. And also, they pay better. Big fights pay better. So you can't beat any of those options. So yeah, whether it be Victor Ortiz, Devin Alexander, any big names, I am definitely interested in all the fights. I think any good fighter you always have to have respect for, as far as their ability to beat you. But at the same time, I get goosebumps anytime I get mentioned for a big fight, and anytime I get a big fight, because I love testing myself against the best, and I love being a part of the center of attention in a big fight.
And the main event when you fight is Bernard Hopkins and Chad Dawson. Who wins that fight?
It's a close fight, man. It's a close fight. Right off, when I read about it, I thought Chad, I said, no way Bernard Hopkins would beat Chad Dawson. But, when you bring all the intangibles Bernard brings to the table as far as mental capacity to control a fight, control getting an opponent's head, getting the referee's head, which he tends to do a lot as well. His ability to slow down the fight, his ability to become the referee in his own fight, even though the referee is in the ring. All those are veteran moves and veteran things that Bernard does, and he makes it difficult to beat him. And, I think it's going to be a close fight. And I think the referee is going to come in into is going to be a key figure in this fight because, if Bernard is allowed to referee his own fight, it's hard to beat him. But if the referee takes control of the fight and doesn't let him referee his own fight, well then Bernard is in a tough fight, And so either way, I think it's a good fight. I think it's a good fight between two world class fighters. You have to respect what Bernard Hopkins has done for himself, for the sport of boxing, and just for anybody in general in terms of because of what he accomplished. You can look at his example and say I can accomplish anything I want to as well, So he put his mind to something and he accomplished something that had never been done before. But I think it's a great fight. It's a great storyline. I can't say it's a great fight. Listen, because the fight has the potential to be a dud. Because a lot of times these kind of fights with Bernard and a guy who's really talented like a Chad Dawson, end up, he has to make the pace really slow and he has to deaden the fight. And so sometimes it's not a great fight. But as far as what Bernard has accomplished and what these two guys bring to the table as far as the ability they have, I think you're probably looking at the two best light heavyweights in the world right now. And so they're in the ring against each other. And that's what boxing is all about. Anytime you can get the top two guys to fight each other, the fans should be happy. So I don't know style-wise if it makes for a great fight. I think it makes for a very close fight. And it's the two best light heavyweights in the world. So I'm glad the fight got made.
Paulie, hey, it's Ernie again. Let me ask you a question about, now, throughout your career, you've always been an outspoken guy. I remember seeing you way back in the day when you weren't even fighting, you were getting kicked out of I do think it was Foxwoods, correct?
Yep, you remember correctly, yep.
Now, has it always been a plan of yours to just bring out your true personality and always be this outspoken, I'm going to hold my own, I'm going to defend myself, even if it means this kind of maybe offending people a little bit or maybe just turning people off? Has it always been steadfast, and has it always been hard? Has there ever been a hard time where you just say, you know what, maybe sometimes I should have just calmed down a little bit?
Sometimes I do tell myself, like, wow, you know, maybe I could have bit my tongue on that one, you know. But some, you know, my problem is, you know, the way I feel is what I'm going to say. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's fortunately or unfortunately, at this point in my career, people know I have that reputation where whatever I'm thinking, I'm going to say it. I'm not going to sugarcoat an answer. So guess what? Anytime something controversial happens in boxing or something happens, guess who the guy they call is to get his opinion? Is me, because they know they're going to get a real answer from me. You know what I mean? So sometimes I think I should just, you know, deflect questions or maybe not give my opinion. But, man, I'm so opinionated and I'm so, you know, emotional about certain things in the sport that, you know, I end up, you know, giving it the way I see it, you know. I answer the question the way I see it. And sometimes people are put off by my opinion of things and the way I view things. But, you know, it hasn't always been a plan of mine. But at the same time, I've always been one to try not to shy away about being myself. You know what I mean? I'm a grown man. You know, being a grown man means you can't be scared to be yourself, you know, no matter what the circumstances are, you know. And, yeah, maybe people may get turned off at times, but, you know, all I know how to be is myself, you know. And I think at some points it's helped me in my career and at some points it's hurt me in my career, you know. But as far as situations where I got thrown out of Foxwoods Casino, for example, that night, you know, I remember that night my name was being swelled and fighting in one of the guys who was in the main event that night. And I got thrown out because, you know, I got water thrown on me from the corner. One of the trainers was talking trash back and forth with me, and he ended up throwing, like, a thing of water at me. I tried to jump in the ring, and I got thrown out. But all of that, looking back, kept me in the public eye, even though I was missing a chunk load of time with hand injuries. I mean, I remember in 2004 and 2005, I fought maybe 3-4 times in 2 years, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
for a prospect, that's nothing. It's almost nothing for a prospect. So I was able to keep my name in the mix without fighting, because of my personality, you know, and I did that on my own. Nobody helped me to do that. Nobody told me to do that. I did that on my own, and it's kind of like, you know, I did it, and I don't regret it really, because I think it managed to keep me in the public eye, and it managed to get myself fights sometimes, you know.
No one ever
later
forgets
on.
You. I'll say that, Mitch. No one will ever forget you, Paulie.
Exactly. You know, And that's my intention every time. You know, I fight. I've done some crazy hairstyles. I've done some crazy
yeah,
outfits. You know,
I'm sorry, but the Superman look, that was a bad look, dog. I mean, yeah. I've always that was a bad look, bro.
Yeah, you know, so I've always done stuff, you know, to try to stand out from the crowd, try to separate myself from the crowd, and you know, especially in a sport like boxing where it's popular but it's a niche sport, you kind of got to stand out from the crowd a little bit, and I think I've done a good job in doing that, and I think it's helped me.
Two questions. One, I have to say it. I have to, because people are asking out there. Do you watch Jersey Shore?
I've you know, people assume I'm of that ilk, I'm of that character, and they can assume that if they want. And first of all, I don't knock anybody. I don't hate on anybody. And I will not hate on the Jersey Shore crew. But in, what is it, 4 seasons they've had? I've probably watched about 5 episodes out of 4 seasons altogether.
Cool. So
I mean, I'm familiar. I am familiar with all the characters, you know. I'm familiar with all the characters, and more power to them. They're doing a great job with themselves, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, you know, I'm not the guy who sits down every Wednesday or Thursday when it's on, and all my friends watch it. You know, my best friend, sometimes I call him up, and he's like, yo, you gotta call me back, Jersey Shore's on, you know? I'm not like that. Like I said, in 4 or 5 seasons, what is there, 8 to 10 episodes a season? So
yeah.
There's probably 40, 50 episodes. I probably watched about 4 or 5 of them in total, you know. But they're doing good. They're doing good. And I'm actually friends with Paulie D on Twitter. And, you know, he used to hit me up saying he might come to my fight. So, you know.
That's
cool. Oh, that's
so, it's all good either way. So we'll see.
I guess we'll have an indictment on your friends, Paulie.
What happened? I didn't hear you.
I think that's more of an indictment on your friends, huh?
yeah, exactly.
And one question I have to ask, and someone told me that you have definite opinions about this. What do you think of Manny Pacquiao's rise in weight?
you know, this is one of those where I gotta bite my tongue. I train at Wild Card, and believe me, I haven't bitten my tongue times. So you guys know what I feel about it. You know, my opinion doesn't change. I don't answer a question with any hidden agenda. What you see is what you get. But when I answer a question, sometimes people answer a question, answering it one way, but they're really getting at something else. That's not the case with me. You know, anytime I answer a question, I tell it exactly as I see it. And you know, you guys know what I feel about that.
I know. It became a really big topic on the boxing team forum.
And my opinion hasn't changed. Like, I train at Wild Card Gym, and I'm grateful for Freddie Roach allowing me to do that. But my opinion is my opinion, and it has not changed. And just because I train at Wild Card Gym, it doesn't change. But, you know, I'm just not. I just kind of, you know, out of respect to really Freddie more than anything else.
Paulie, how are the hands?
I hurt my hands in the Jose Cotto fight in April.
Yeah.
So I had to take a longer layoff than I wanted to. Because my intention was to fight again in the summer, and I couldn't. Seems like I'm healed up. We'll see fight night. You know, anytime I put on those 8-ounce gloves, man, it's like sometimes I just get hurt. You know, in the gym I'm fine though, so we'll see. We'll see how they hold up when I'm fighting.
Does it hinder you a little bit? I know that, you know, people say, well, he only has 6 knockouts and this and that.
Absolutely.
Do you think that because of the hand issues that it really hindered you from really putting on what you think is the best Paulie Malignaggi?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, but it's also made me a smart fighter. It's forced me to fight more intelligently, to be a good ring general. And figure out intelligent ways to win fights when I'm faced with injuries and adversity like that, you know. Absolutely, you know, people knock my power, but, you know, listen, there's plenty of knockouts you get just from overwhelming guys. And how many world-class fighters really win by knockout at a world-class level? You know what I'm saying? Very little, very little.
Good
job. Only the pure punches win at a world-class level by knockout on a consistent basis, you know. Bernard Hopkins hasn't had a knockout in, 7-8 years. Winky Wright didn't have a knockout any time I ever used to watch him. He was in a lot of big fights, you know. So at a world-class level, you don't see a lot of knockouts when two fighters that are good at fighting each other. So at a world-class level, the world-class fighters I fought, it's already hard enough to knock them out. But even earlier in my career, where I probably would have got plenty of knockouts just on overwhelming guys, even if I wasn't going to stop them on one punch, I wasn't able to overwhelm anybody because when your hands are hurting, you kind of have to budget your combinations. And when you have to budget your combinations, you end up winning on points.
Yeah. So the hands are better now. Hopefully they'll hold up on October 15th. You don't know much about Orlando Lora, but what we do know, Paulie, is that you bring the best and you've never shied away from any challenge. I remember you put in on such a gutsy performance against guys like Miguel Cotto and Amir Khan and so forth. So we expect nothing short of the same October 15th, Paulie. And we actually really thank you for coming on and sharing your thoughts. You know, a lot of things that were asked and answered, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Oh no, thanks, guys. You know, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I look forward to bringing out the best Paulie Malignaggi next Saturday night.
And when we get, you know, when we get Devin in contact, you want to go head to head with Devin and clear out some differences here?
Why not?
I personally would love to see you and Devin, you know, because we've had this once before. We had Paul Wolak and Kenan Brundage.
I heard it was crazy. Yeah, I heard.
We've been wanting
that. Yeah, you know, why not, man? You know, I'm always up for doing that kind of stuff. You know, anything to get a rise out of people, anything to get a rise out of the fans. And, you know, the fans, as much as they hate me, you know, they love to see that stuff. You know, they love to hear that stuff.
You know what? I think the tide has turned to where whereas in the beginning they used to really, really hate you. Now I think they understand and appreciate where you were coming from all these years. Because let's put it this way. If you were 28 and something with 6 knockouts, would people pay attention to that average guy, or would they pay attention to someone that says, you know what, I'm a 3-time champ, I'm this, I'm that. You're going to notice me whether you like it or not. And if you don't like me, that's fine. But you're still going to watch me. You know,
I've managed to put myself at a high enough level where, you know, people are going to watch my fights because I fight at a pretty high level. And I fight on, you know, on shows where people are going to tune in and watch them either way. So, you know, I end up getting watched because boxing fans will watch the shows I fight on, you know. And from there, I think maybe you get a certain level of appreciation. Maybe you don't. But, you know, you got to keep in mind, knockouts and no knockouts. I've beaten guys with knockouts. I've beaten guys who have maybe knocked out other guys who other guys couldn't beat, and I've beaten them. You know, like, you name it, you know, I've done it. You know what I mean? And, you know, even when I come up short, I always try to give my best. So, So one way or another, I think, you know, you don't have to like me, but you're definitely going to remember me for sure.
I don't think anybody will ever forget you, Paulie. October 15th, live on pay-per-view under the Hopkins-Dawson, believe it or not, undercard. We have Paulie Malignaggi facing Orlando Lora. Thank you, Paulie, for everything. And when you win and come out victorious, we'd love to have you back on, brother.
For sure, man. I look forward to it. Thanks again.
Cool. Thanks, Paulie.
All right.
Thanks, Paulie.
Well, dang. We went through four guests, and it's still just short of 8 o'clock, man. Wow.
It's fair.
Yeah, we can go over some news and notes here. I do want to bring up, I think it's great that all these guests had something to add to the show, and, you know, it was the knowledge of Manny, the bravado of Tavoris, the bravado of Peter Quillen, and I don't know, man, Paulie was a little subdued for what I'm accustomed to, and it's not that it was bad, he came off highly intelligent, and some of the levels that he speaks upon are really high level, and I enjoyed that because he does bring a breath of fresh air to a call like that. News and notes. Hey, do we have an updated one? Let me see. Oh yeah, Miguel Cotto just announced today, and we just had the man he got rid of in Manny Stewart on. He's switching trainers from Miguel Cotto Manny Stewart to Pedro Luis Diaz. If I'm not mistaken, this is the same guy who trained Orlandier Solis. And I know a lot of Cotto fans out there were really disappointed to hear this. They were hoping if that was true, which it turned out to be true, that he'd go with the likes of a guy like Nazim Richardson and so forth. But nope, Pedro Luis Diaz is getting the call, and I'll throw it to Ryan. You know, what do you think? What do you make of this?
Well, he also trained Yoel Casamayor for some of his fights as well.
Mm.
So he does have, he does have some experience, but he seems like most of his fighters were more of the amateurs. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's more to it than we know, but mm-hmm. to me, going into this fight, I wouldn't have changed. It kind of reminds me of, Chad Dawson switching from Manny Stewart.
But see, here's the thing, though. The difference between Chad and Miguel's going to someone he's never worked with before.
Right.
Whereas Chad, he went back to John Scully, who he's fairly familiar with. I don't know, Lewis, do you think this affects the fight in any way?
You know, it definitely calls for concern. You know, when I heard that, I didn't like the news of changing trainers to me, especially for a big fight and this close to the fight, is never a good idea. We'll find out, in December if it's going to change or if it's going to help him out. I think Cotto, no matter who he's going to train with, is going to have a tough time with Margarito anyway. But, it's a little alarming. Manny, he did sound a little upset about it. I don't think he was expecting it. And yeah. I actually talked to Cotto at the presser, at the LA presser, and I asked him, because I didn't see Manny Stewart there, and I realized he was training, but I asked him, is he still training you? He said he was still his chief trainer. I guess that all changed within a matter of a week. So
yeah, it's the sad, unfortunate thing is a lot of these decisions are made off of haste and maybe emotion, and I hope that's not the case for Cotto. I hope this was, a meeting and decision that they all said, for the best, this is what we need to do, this is the route we need to go. And it does not include Manny Stewart. But I have a feeling and a gut instinct that this was made a little bit hasty, and it was probably maybe a bit of stubbornness. Well, if Manny can't come X amount at X date, then we got to move on without him. And I bet you that's what happened. And unfortunately, Manny got the call where he was, services were no longer needed. And that's an unfortunate thing because, like I said, if Tony's going to go out there and beat Cotto again, I want it to be no excuses, there's no reason why, no out for a guy like Cotto. And now there's going to be an out. Well, if he had a better trainer, this and that. Kind of the same thing that went on after the Manny Pacquiao fight, where the inexperience of, I forget the name of the guy's name.
Santiago.
Santiago, thank you, Ryan. Where the inexperience of Santiago kind of played out, and people say, well, if his uncle was there, it would have been a different story. And I kind of see the same scenario happening. I hope not, but we'll see. It's unfortunate. No one likes turmoil in anybody's camps, and with a very important fight coming up, and hopefully this is just a small bump on the radar and they can move on. Other big news this week, Tim Bradley signed with Top Rank. He's going to face the ever dangerous and ever old I know Tamora said that Hopkins is the oldest fighter ever. No, Joel de Casamayor is the oldest fighter ever. He's facing Joel Casamayor. A lot of people scratched their heads and said, oh, man, this is the same guy who called out Skip Khan, and now he's fighting this guy who's old. He's 40. He's, you know what? People, relax. It's a stay busy fight. It's his first fight under Top Rank, and we all know what's going on. He's going to be in line to fight a guy like Manny Pacquiao. He's going to be in line to fight, you know, future opponents coming up. It's not as bad as people think, and I think people just dismissed him because of all the what transpired prior to him finally signing the Top Rank. And I don't know, Ryan, I know this fight's not ideal and it's not great and it's not what we had envisioned, but is it okay for him to take a kind of a stay-busy fight right now before he goes on against the big boys?
I'm fine with it. I mean, look at it. Bradley hasn't fought since January. He'll have been off 10 months by the time he steps in the ring. So he'll be a little bit rusty. Wasn't it last year? He only fought once last year, so he hasn't been real active the last couple of years.
Yep.
So I think, you know, in Casamayor, the one thing the dude can do is still take a punch. And Bradley doesn't have the biggest punch, so it's going to go, most likely, you know, the full 10 or 12 rounds. I'm not sure what it's scheduled for. So he gets to stay busy. It's a southpaw, which helps him get ready for Manny.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, next May we see Pacquiao and Bradley. And if we can't get Mayweather, I think Bradley's one of the best options out there for Manny.
I'm not mad at this fight, Lewis. To me, I got to be honest with you. I'm not real mad at this fight. Of course we want to see the best fight against the best, and I consider Timmy one of the top two at 140 still, even though his inactivity kind of played a factor in this. But I'm not really mad at this fight.
I'm not either. I mean, you know, like you guys said, he's coming off a long layoff. You know, he's working on the top right now. If anything, I'm happy for Tim, you know, to be able to get in the ring before the end of the year. You know, earlier this year, it looked like he was not going to be fighting in the ring anytime soon. I'm sure they worked something out. Whatever his deal is, at least he's still being able to fight. And like you said, Ernie, I mean, all it really is, he's a plan B for Manny Pacquiao in case the Mayweather fight doesn't happen. And I'm sure Bob wants to get him in the ring as soon as possible, get him warmed up, and, you know, we'll see what happens next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a typical Top Rank move in that they reload their holster with ammunition to line up Manny Pacquiao for the next few years. I mean, he could really, if you think about it, I mean, there's Mike Jones, there's Mike Alvarado, there's Tim Bradley. If Brandon Rios comes up all the way to 140-ish, there's Brandon Rios. I mean, there's a lot of guys that Bob has lined up to take away from the sting that if a Mayweather fight does not transpire. And I'm not mad at that. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, people, like I said, people think that this Cold War is over and they can start negotiating again. Not so fast. I really think that there's still maybe some animosity, but there's just an unwillingness to work together that that affects the landscape of the sport. And, you know, until that really thaws out, until both sides really see that, you know, it's beneficial for them to work together, not just when it's needed, we're going to get a lot of this. We're going to get a lot of people having a lot of in-house fighters. I mean, look at November 5th. November 5th is an in-house card. Angulo, Kirkland, Quillen and McEwen are all in-house with Golden Boy, and there's no outrage for that. But yet there's an outrage for Top Rank when it does it.
Well, you know, so, look at November, not to cut you off, but look at November 26th. Before Canelo was set to fight Kermit Cintron, Golden Boy made sure that they would have a deal with options on Kermit Cintron, or they wouldn't do that deal. So it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think so many people are lashing out at guys like, you know, at a promoter like Top Rank, but you know what? Other people are doing this, you know, and if they have the ability to do it, they're going to do it. You know, it's just more convenient. It gets deals done, and, you know, it's a sad state of the sport. I'm sorry?
And they get to keep all the money from both sides.
And it's a sad state of the sport that we can't really see the true matchups, but given the landscape that we live in, you got to deal with it. You know, you got to make do, and they are, and they're moving on. And speaking of November 5th, we've got quite a bit of boxing that night. We've got Johnson Butte on Showtime. Then to counter-program that, we've got Angulo Kirkland. We've got Quillen McEwen. And now, if that wasn't enough, we've got the nightmare Chris Arreola fighting on Televisa against Alonzo Butler, a guy who's lost to a couple of opponents that Chris has faced already. Since Mr. Molina couldn't get the fight with Brandon Rios that he had hoped for, He's fighting on that card now as well. So there's a lot of boxing on November 5th, and I think this begins, this, I think October 15th is going to begin a stretch where we're really going to start to see a lot of boxing action, a lot of boxing cards, and unfortunately a lot of dueling dates. You know, there's going to be just counter-programming everywhere. And like I said, I don't think that part is necessarily a part of the, well, you know, if I'm Top Rank, then I got to, you know, if I'm Golden Boy, then I got to counter-program Top Rank on purpose. I think it's just the dates are drawing up. Yeah, but it's that and that we don't get to see, focus on one card solely. We have to DVR. Thank God for DVRs, you know, by the way. I don't know. I mean, are you excited? I'll ask Lewis since I haven't asked him in a little bit. Are you excited about the prospects of what's coming up this second half?
Definitely, man. It's just, they're closing out the year pretty strong. You know, we thought there wasn't going to be a lot going on, and it seems like dates and fights keep popping up out of everywhere, even if they're going against each other. But hey, I'm happy, man. The more boxing, the better. I don't think anybody's complaining, and you know, it's going to be a great way to end the year, and you know, hopefully the start of next year continues the same.
Yeah, I hope this transitions into a strong 2012. I think we started off fast in 2011. We had a little bit of a lull right in the middle, but I think the way it's ending up, we do have some potential fight of the years coming up. You know, we're going to see Wolak Rodriguez again. Actually, I heard Tyson Concepcion is the what is it? Hernan Tyson Hernandez versus Concepcion done again, right? That's a done deal for Arenas, right?
Yep, that's on a Top Rank live card, I think, or a Box Azteca, one or the other.
Fantastic. So I think even the small cards on small levels, I think this Friday, the Showbox that we have, I think that's a good card between Contreras and Bogiri. And you know, there's a lot of good shows coming on. And let's hope to see that the second half becomes a stellar, memorable second half so we can wrap up the year strong. Because I know that it has been riddled with some cancellations and so forth. Also, we saw this Saturday, and I got to be honest with you, it was probably the most disgusting. I almost threw up in my mouth twice. Chase off I've ever seen. We saw Juan Manuel Marquez, Manny Pacquiao, do the what HBO calls as the Loud It series face off with Max Kellerman. This time they put him in front of a big screen so they can go over their past two fights. And I'm sorry, it was absolute garbage. It was awful. It was atrocious. You got Juan Manuel Marquez trying to best imitate a Pepto-Bismol pill. Again, you know, sided against Manny Pacquiao, who's wearing Floyd Mayweather's Gucci knockoff. And I don't get it, man. It wasn't entertaining in any way. This show is, if you're going to put programming on about boxing, make it entertaining and make people want to see what this is all about. And this, it was boring. I don't know. I mean, Ryan, did you get the same reaction?
Yeah, it sucked. But the best part was probably the worst part was when Max asked Freddie to show the punch that Manny threw where he got caught and almost passed. And then when Max said, "No, Freddie, let Manny do it. The people want to see the fighter do it." I just started laughing. I think I started to drift off and was looking at my phone or texting somebody. And that made me look back up, and I just started cracking up. It's like that was the only kind of interesting part. I mean, neither guy are real flamboyant to begin with. But, yeah, I mean, it was a good concept, I guess, to try to show their first two fights. But I don't know. It was a better concept than it actually turned out to be.
Yeah, and I think if that wasn't the final nail in the coffin for face-off, I don't know what it is, Lewis. It was atrocious.
Yeah, you know, the problem was they actually went away from what they normally do, which is actually sit the fighters down and have them face each other. And that whole reenactment, looking at that two fights, I mean, it was boring. It was stupid. I mean, I was watching it thinking, I hope the whole show is not about this. And I think the only interesting part came at the end when Max actually started asking Manny and Marquez some questions. I mean, if they're going to do this, man, do it the right way. Don't ever do this again, Max. I mean, it was just terrible, man.
Yeah, it was. God, I don't even want to recall it anymore. All I know is Marquez wore pink. Manny wore Gucci from, like, 1987. And, oh, my God. It's just, never mind. It was horrible. And hopefully they realize just how awful this was and don't do it again. You know, hopefully they try to change the aspects. But
Vladimir Klitschko and David Haye was the best one by far.
Yeah, but even then, you could see, I mean, it was good when it happened, But in hindsight, just to see David can say, oh, I'm getting hard over this. I mean, come on, dude.
My favorite one was Floyd, I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, you know what? Like I said,
that was the funniest line.
If you had a daughter, you would name him. You would name her Floyd, wouldn't you?
No, I name her Floydina.
And on that note, our time is up. I really want to thank everybody for tuning into the podcast. We had a stacked show today, and we didn't get to touch too much on past news and notes, but we did. We covered everything we needed to cover, and we had a stellar cast of guests. We opened the show with Manny Stewart. He gave us his thoughts about the Cotto split, and then just broke down things like Klitschko and Lee and so forth, and Lee's shot against Martinez. Always very eye-opening when we get guys on that level on, and then it was really appreciative. And if that wasn't enough, we had IBF light heavyweight titleist Tavoris Cloud on, talking smack. He became
looking for all them bitches.
Yeah, all them bitches. He wants to put the light heavyweight division asses up, and I have a tendency to believe that. He was fantastic on the show and made his debut for us, and we really appreciate him coming on. We had middleweight contender PD Kid Chocolate Quillen come on and just basically light up the show with his pros and his thoughts about everything from New York to the East Coast, West Coast, his chances against Craig McEwen on November 5th, and we finally wrapped it up with Paulie Malignaggi, who is always a joy to have on the show, and he had plenty to say, and even in a more subdued mode, you really listen and kind of, I personally gravitate towards Paulie, because I think he's always been a well-spoken guy, so I for one appreciated that. We broke it down, and next week, if our guests come through, like we think it's going to be a stellar show again. And I, for one, thank you, each and every one of you out there for listening. It's really appreciative. You can find better. I'm sure you can find better ways to spend your 2 hours of your day. But we really appreciate you guys coming on and listening to us. For the Boxing Lab, I'm Ernest Gavione. Ryan.
Good night, everybody.
And we'll wrap it up as always with Lewis.
Keep on trucking. And by the way, I watch Jersey Shore. I'm just saying.
You know what? I ain't gonna lie. I watch Jersey Shore too. I every Thursday, and I DVR it just in case I don't get to see it.
Shout out to Pauly D.
Pauly D. All right, you guys. Take care.